Thank you, Lisa. I'm Satise Wilmore, and I work for the City of Pasadena Public Health Department. And the other hat I wear is the Public Information Officer. So today we're going to talk to you a little bit more about the Pasadena experience, how we were able to get our local multi-unit housing policy passed by City Council. So towards the end of my presentation, Lydia Costa, my coworker, is going to come up and share a little bit with you about some of the complaints that we were getting and a little bit about how you need to be sensitive to those kind of complaints that come into your office if you experience that. I think it's important to talk about policy, but this is a very cutting-edge policy on tobacco control, and some of you may have not done a policy ever before, and so it's really important to learn how to be sensitive and to sort of look at both sides of the issue. But this is really a public health issue. Even though people comment, oh, you know, this is invasion of privacy, you're really going overboard, we've been called several things, and Lydia can share that with you, zealots and things like that, but this is really about the quality of life. If you can't breathe inside your own home, it's a problem. So I'm going to talk to you more about the policy end and the Pasadena experience. So the disclaimer is blank because I just want to tell you I don't receive any tobacco industry money and I have no financial ties or any relationships. So I want to kind of put things into context for you before we start to talk about it. We in Pasadena have done a lot of policy tobacco control work. Really back in May of 2008, we had gone before City Council and we just got adopted our outdoor air ordinance that primarily got rid of smoking in outdoor public spaces such as outdoor dining. We have the 20-foot rule, which means that you can't smoke within 20 feet of a main entrance, exit, or operable window. And that was pretty cutting edge for us. But at that time, there was also a little bit of discussion among the council about multi-unit housing because there had been some areas that had already passed their laws, like south of us in South Pasadena and whatnot. In March 2010, we were told to come back with an informational report to the Public Safety Committee. The Public Safety Committee is a subset of City Council that hears all the public health issues that come before City Council, just to kind of hash out if there's any issues or concerns and to really understand what the policy options are that staff are bringing forward. So we went to the Public Safety Committee several times before going to Council. Of course, as we're charged to do with any policy in Pasadena, we have to gather and research some information, find out what other communities are doing, and sort of what is the current feel out there for multi-unit housing. Are the policies working? Are they not? And that was a challenge because there were some policies that were put in place, but we really didn't have a good model on implementation and enforcement because it still is a fairly new cutting-edge policy in the tobacco control field. So just to kind of put things into context, for the last 20 years, the City Council of Pasadena really get public health. They really understand the issue. They really understand tobacco control issues. So we're very fortunate in our area. We've done tobacco retail licensing, conditional use permit, smoke-free parks, etc. And then the second bullet, as you see, it talks about the comprehensive policy that I just mentioned. And in 2008, it also included outdoor public areas such as the Tournament of Roses Parade. How many of you have been to the Tournament of Roses Parade? Oh, good. Oh, good. So let us know if they're smoking because it's supposed to be smoke-free since 2008. And so we work really closely with our Environmental Health Division to make sure that that's being enforced. And so with all of what we've done in Pasadena, we're still missing a really big piece. And so really multi-unit housing and policies around this issue was really sort of the logical next step in addition to the complaints that we were receiving. With all these protections that we have done, people were still being exposed to places to where they live. So that was something that was keeping Lydia and I up all night. So the health effects of secondhand smoke, I won't go through that because Lisa really touched on that well, but I think we all need to understand as public health professionals the danger of the kind of chemicals that we're dealing with. And so this is not me, this is your Surgeon General of the United States really saying that this is a very, very serious chemical mixture that can cause death. So we need to know what we're up against. And then basically there's more than 200 scientific research studies. We know the argument about secondhand smoke is pretty much over with, but we still have people that say that secondhand smoke, you know, doesn't cause death and you're all crazy public health professional people and blah, blah, blah. So we also did our own studies in terms of researching, not our own studies, but researching what studies out there specifically relate to multi-unit housing, and we have that information. So let me just put into context, our tobacco control program is funded by the California Department of Public Health, the California Tobacco Control Program, Proposition 99. And so for us to sort of get a statewide feel on what other communities were doing at the time, it was about 34 policies statewide. And, you know, we wanted to get a feel for, okay, what do those policies really look like? We've had information that suggests, you know, you've got certain percent of units that were being restricted. You had compliance times that were very different that ranged from, you know, 3 months to 5 years. And then, of course, the city of Los Angeles is actually directed their city council to kind of look at this as an issue for multi-unit housing, but only for common areas. And so when, again, we were kind of trying to get a feel for what was happening around us, at that time, the most comprehensive ordinances were the city of Richmond, South Pasadena, which is like 5 minutes south of Pasadena, and then we had Belmont, Sestapol, and we also had Union City and Santa Clara County that also had some policies in place. So just like Lisa, we also did some community surveys, you know, standing out in front of the 99-cent store, blocking people as they go into Vons or any other kind of grocery store, standing on the street and competing with somebody who is text messaging or on the cell phone with a really significant other. And so it was really hard to get these surveys, but we got her done. So and Lydia did most of that work along with our Pasadena Tobacco Prevention Coalition. So we did surveys in 2008 and 2009. The 2009 surveys were really done at multi-unit housing complexes like apartment buildings, condominiums, and the 2008 survey was more of a community intercept survey. So what we found from the data was that 77% would support a policy to prohibit smoking outdoor common areas, which is really sort of your basic policy. I mean, most multi-unit housing policies has this as a common provision. And then 63% would support a policy to prohibit smoking inside the units and to prohibit smoking on residential balconies and patios. 79% wanted to be protected from smoke entering into their homes. 75% would prefer to live in a non-smoking section of the building, and 72% in a completely non-smoking building altogether. And then 80% were in favor of a law that required some multi-unit housing units to be non-smoking. And 74% said, you know, it should be really applicable to new and existing buildings. So grandfathering that whole issue about whether or not people should be, people should be grandfathered in. That was kind of violent. Sorry about that. So we were really pleased with the results, and it seemed to be really consistent across the San Gabriel Valley, in addition to some other surveys that we had been seeing up north in California and also in our area. So one of the things that we did, too, is we did some outreach to proactively meet with relevant multi-unit housing groups, the folks that we knew would have concerns and questions and would bring up some of the hard questions that we do need to think about before we had brought before any policy before City Council. And so we met with the Apartment Association of Greater Los Angeles, AGLA, and you'll see the others up there. The Foothill Apartment Association is really key in Pasadena. We also met with the Pasadena Foothill Association of Realtors, which is also really important as well. So let me just talk for a minute the overall health and economic benefits of sort of why you want to do a multi-unit housing. And again, framing the issue is really important. We're not telling people what to do inside their homes, although some folks might disagree with that. This is a public health issue. If you can't breathe in your home, if you can't sleep and you're having headaches, it is a quality of life issue. And so framing the issue is really important. So these are some of the benefits of why you would want to do a policy, and of course increased quality of life and reduced risk of health effects, SIDS, low birth weight, reduced fire hazards. We actually had Bevan and Brock, who's one of the biggest apartment builders in Pasadena, that said, you know what, we would love if you would do a policy like this, because then we can kind of, you know, blame it on the city that this is sort of a policy and we've got to adhere to it. But you know what, we had somebody that smoked inside their unit and the bed caught a fire and it gutted like most of the building. So they really saw this as a really great opportunity to reduce that fire hazard. Reduced insurance premiums and faster turnover of smoke-free units. But really, too, this policy reflects the non-smoking rates in our area, particularly for Pasadena. It's about 10.3%, according to a Los Angeles County survey. So let's get right into the meat of this. So why am I standing here talking to you about our multi-unit housing policy, and why is this so important? These are the staff recommendations that were brought to City Council, and as I said before, it started at Public Safety Committee, and then it kind of went on for about 3 or 4 months, and then it ended up at City Council. But I just have to tell you that I met this guy, and his name is Staff Report. Some of you may know him as Agenda Report. He has really long hair, and it's usually about 10 pages long. But as we began to, you know, kind of go to the coffee shops and hang out a little bit, it was really great because he was able to tell me, you know what, you really need to look at your existing municipal code. What is already on your books that maybe you can leverage this policy on? Do you need to really create your own policy? Does it need to be brand new? What's already on the books that you may not know about that you can maybe create a policy from? So public nuisance was one of the ones that we took a close look at because we did see that as a policy option that some communities were adopting. And I'll talk a little bit later about, although I thought it was a brilliant idea to come up with a recommendation and do this, the City Council did not adopt it, but it's still a lesson learned. And then basically, go to the next slide here, prohibiting tobacco smoke on patios and balconies is also another area that we recommended because it made sense, but you have to be careful about your provisions. It doesn't make sense just to do one provision, like to ban smoking on outdoor patios and balconies, and then you don't do units, because then what are you going to do? You're going to drive more of the smoke inside of the unit. So you really want to be careful to make sure that your policies are complementary and it doesn't actually do the reverse effect. And then recommendation C was to require disclosure of the ordinance to all prospective and existing tenants and buyers in rental and lease purchase agreements by January 2012. January 2012, yeah. We're working on it. And we do have a form that's at the city attorney's office that's hopefully going to be approved pretty soon. But basically, it's what you want to do with this policy is you want to prevent an existing policy from getting even worse. And so that's why I really love disclosure, because it does a lot of that. And then basically what we did was, in terms of units, we said that smoke-free housing would actually occur as a staff recommendation by 2014, and this recommendation would apply to all multi-unit housing. That's multi-unit housing defined as 2 units or more. And really that would allow for staff time to really implement the policy, but then for us to really work with the owners and landlords is sort of phasing it in. And then also to allow for industry trends to reflect current no smoking status and patterns. So in summary, this is sort of what we thought would be a really good proposal to City Council, be absorbed in the department's budget. We budgeted $8,000 for signage. And about $58,000 for the cost of actual enforcement. You really do not know your true cost of enforcement for any policy until about a year to 18 months out. So one of the things that I want to talk about really briefly before I turn it over to Lydia is this is sort of our implementation plan. and I know that some of you are going to be having questions on this, but basically it's to do the outreach, and then if we get a complaint, there's a number that people call, there will be an investigation, and then of course if someone is actually smoking, there is a citation, which is basically like a ticket citation. We'll talk more about that on the Q&A. And then we have the proposed recommendations that really sort of reflected this comprehensive approach, and it sort of brought the city of Pasadena back in line with what was happening with cities surrounding us. And then this is a summary of sort of what was adopted and what was not adopted. So although a lot of ordinances around us have public nuisance, the city council didn't really feel that that was a necessary policy. If all multi-unit housing is going to be going smoke-free in a certain year, why do you need nuisance? We don't want to create this sort of tension between tenants. But we did get B, C, and D adopted, and then we got surprise with D and E. They established phase-in period for 100% smoke-free housing by 2014. They said, that's too long. Why are we waiting so long for it to be smoke-free? So the council actually decided by 2013, a year earlier. And then we got a surprise. All new housing construction was supposed to be effective immediately. So anything in the plan check is just going to have to get used to it. So now what I'd like to do is kind of turn it over to Lydia so she can explain to you the problem complaints we were getting and really what it was like living in a cancer cloud and some of the calls that were coming in. So, Lydia?
Thank you, Stephies. Hello, everyone. My name is Lydia Acosta, and I'm the program assistant and community representative for the Pasadena Public Health Department Tobacco Control Program. And what I am going to present to you today is drifting tobacco smoke in multi-unit housing, the problem and complaints living, well, that our program received, people calling with their problems and complaints, and therefore the title Living in a Cancer Cloud is so appropriate. Since 2007, we began to receive complaints about secondhand smoke drifting into their home, and therefore we started to share with them about and asking if they were familiar with a voluntary policy. And of course they were not. So we informed them that we offered free technical assistance as for a voluntary policy. And we informed them that we had education workshops, and we offered to, in order to address the issue. At that time, I also informed them that I would be happy to send out a packet that they could give to their manager. Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot to put my finger there. Okay, that they could give to their manager and or property owner to explain that it is legal to adopt a voluntary policy. At the same time, I received four calls from local property owners that were requesting to go 100% smoke-free, affecting their more than 200 units. So what we did is we actually went to their property and we educated them on how to incorporate a voluntary policy. And then the calls continued to come to our program. And by 2008, the calls increased and we're now at 60 complaints. The reason for the increase in 2008 was that was when the outdoor smoking ordinance went into effect. It was outdoor smoking in certain places, meaning there was the outdoor events were smoke-free, the service lines. If you were in a service line, whether it was a movie, ATM, if you wanted to smoke, you needed to move away 20 feet in order to smoke. And there was also the 20-foot rule, which meant that there's no smoking within 20 feet of any entrance, exit, or operable windows. Now, this is the part where the calls started to come in, because apartment residents were under the impression that that 20-foot rule actually meant that people had to remove themselves from an apartment entrance or exit to smoke. And because people were still smoking within the 20 feet, therefore the calls started to come in. And their calls were, their voices were one of frustration, but yet happy because they were under the impression that the ordinance would apply to apartment dwellings. And unfortunately, I had to inform them that the 20-foot rule applied only to businesses. So that was their response to that was one of anger, frustration. Why aren't you doing something? You're the tobacco control program. So it was desperation on their part. At that time, I realized that developing a policy is important, but that I needed to, I actually learned that when I talked to these people, that I needed to be sympathetic, that I needed to be sensitive, that I needed to be understanding, and I needed to be patient. Because I could hear some would be crying, some would be angry, very, very emotional. So that was very, very helpful. It seemed to just quiet them down. They just wanted someone to listen to them. I'm sorry. Oh, there I go again. Sorry about that. Okay. Most smoking complaints coming from neighboring units or balconies and or patios, windows, and doors. Okay. With those calls, the complaint was, I can't open my windows, I can't open my doors. The smoke is coming in from the walls, the air conditioning, electrical sockets, plumbing. And we can't open the doors and we can't open the windows because people are smoking very close to our doors. People are smoking too close on their balconies and so on and so on. Then in addition to that, local residents physically brought their loved ones into our office to complain about the drifting tobacco smoke that included lung problems, cancer survivors, and pregnant women. Well, Statisa and I sat and talked with these people because, again, that just showed their desperation, their suffering, and it just took a lot of patience on our behalf to meet with these people and talk with them. And what we realized is that never in the history of our program did we have people physically bring in their loved one into our office. This one woman came in with her father. He was ill, but she wanted to just send this message through to us, what was going on, as well as other people. So this was very, very gut-wrenching, whether on the phone or now people literally coming to our office to tell us in person, eye to eye, do something. When we talked to these people, we asked them, have you talked to the manager? Have you talked to the owner? Have you talked to your neighbors? Have you talked to the smoker? Oftentimes, yes, I tried talking to the manager. He's a smoker. If he wasn't a smoker, the manager was afraid. They didn't know they could do this legally, that they could do a voluntary policy legally. So there was a lot of fear. They were being ignored. And at the same time, these people are telling us we're experiencing hideous tiredness. We're experiencing difficulty sleeping. We have headaches. We do not feel well. And then on top of that, the stress of having a loved one that was ill. So the other part that was even more gut-wrenching with her, especially on the phone, was the mothers that called when they talked about their children. They were already crying. They were already pleading. Where when I received a call from, say, a male, I heard the concern, but I heard more anger on the male side, whether the woman was always usually more emotional about it, complaining about their children becoming ill more often, missing school, earaches, frequent colds, or constant coughing, and then, of course, more frequent visits to the hospital with children that have asthma. We felt like our hands were tied. You feel helpless. And also, some of them said they even had loss of taste. And then there was also the concern about not only secondhand smoke, but third-hand smoke, especially with toddlers. Because as you know, with third-hand smoke, the residue of the cigarette, which lands on the carpeting, the walls, the windows, the drapes, everything. So you have your toddlers crawling on the floor with their toys, and what do toddlers do right away? Everything goes to their mouth. So the reason I'm sharing this is we thought it was important that you all understand how much people are suffering under a cancer cloud. And then the next presentation, Drifting Tobacco Smoke in Multi-Unit Housing, the opponents and arguments against multi-unit housing. Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. I keep forgetting that. Okay. A few local groups publicly came out against the proposed policy, which was the local Chamber of Commerce and Housing Homeless Network. And Statis will give a little insert about that. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, then I'll just wrap it up. And then, like I said before, property owners were unsure if they could legally adopt any multi-unit housing policy. Again, they felt fear. So we gave them the information from the Technical Assistance Legal Center information, because we are not attorneys. And then for last is media advocacy played a key role in policy development. And Statis will talk more to you about that. I turn it over to Statis. Thank you so much.
So we're a little bit already over our time, so I'm just going to go to the next slide and just really briefly talk about that the opposition can be used when you do it proactively to come to a middle ground on what you need to propose to do for your area. When you can't breathe, nothing matters. This is a public health issue. You need to frame the issue. You are the public health professionals. You know what's best for your community, but don't lose sight of that. Review existing laws. It's so important. Make sure you do the homework, what's already on the books. And implementation and enforcement should be well thought out and addressed early on at the time that you're developing your policies. So thank you very much, and we look forward to you guys going back to your community and making a change.